to Licensed Spiel. I'm Thad Haight.
I'm Carl Wonders.
And this week we are talking about Lady in Waiting.
And hopefully we've been recording enough of these that we will not be keeping the audience waiting that long for this episode like we have been in the past.
Yes, it's the fifth episode of the first season of Columbo.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Norman Lloyd, who I did not know was a director.
Norman Lloyd, who we know as Professor Galen from the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, The Chase, who lived to about 107 or something like that, I think.
It was pretty really old. He just died a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was 106 when he died.
Oh, I was close. Okay. 106. Still, that's a really good run.
He would have been 107 if he had lived out the entirety of 2021. Because he was born in 1914, but he died before his birthday.
Okay. Yeah, I had to look it up when I saw the name of the director. I was like, is that the same one? Because it's a name that could be somebody else, but it's not. It is him.
Yeah, for any of you who listen to this who don't watch Star Trek, which I guess might exist, I assume the only people listening to this are people who know us, but you know, if we actually have a real audience, great, welcome. You probably would know him better from the Dead Poets Society.
Yes, I would say so. However, we have to get that required Star Trek reference in, and it might be the only one I can think of to make for this episode.
I didn't scour IMDb for all the extras to see if any of them had been in Star Trek, but there certainly wasn't anyone I recognized from Star Trek. Yeah. Leslie Nielsen was sadly never in Star Trek.
Yeah, and if you looked at the cast list, you probably would assume that Leslie Nielsen was the murderer in this episode, because mm-hmm. he is easily the most famous name, other than maybe Jesse Royce Landis, who plays the mother. She's a pretty well-known actor from, you know, 50s and 60s.
Which is why I didn't know her.
I may have mentioned this when we were talking about Kate Reed being very close to the age of Suzanne Plachet in that episode. Mm-hmm. And I may have dropped that there was a Hitchcock movie where the woman playing Cary Grant's mother was only like 4 years older than Cary Grant. And that's Jesse Royce Landis, actually. So bringing it around full circle again. So she plays Cary Grant's mother in North by Northwest.
That's the one with the plane.
That is right. The one with the plane. Yes.
Yes. Okay. I have not seen it, but I know of that, which I believe is a conversation, a very similar to the conversation we had all the way back on our second episode.
Yes.
When we talked about From Russia with Love.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So the murderer in this episode is played by Susan Clark, who is probably the first like relatively unknown actor. I mean, she was done things, but I think these days anyone who might recognize her would recognize her as the mom from Webster, which is a, you know, okay.
I'm aware of Webster.
Yeah.
I've never seen Webster, but I am aware of it.
She was one of the primary actors in Webster.
Okay. Wait, no. Webster had that one episode with Star Trek, right? That was Webster? Or was that something else? Yeah, Webster. It was an episode.
Oh, they did the crossover with TNG.
Yeah, where he was on the season 2 TNG set for a while, for whatever reason. I have seen clips of that, so I cannot say I have not seen any Webster. I have seen some of that.
Oh, yeah, look, there's the picture of Webster with Worf.
Yes.
Nice.
Michael Dorn was given a special guest star credit in that episode.
Excellent. I'm assuming he's the only principal from the show.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Memory Alpha article on it right now.
I like the intruder unarmed shot. There's this woman at the science station, and they have a little graphic of Webster in the background.
He meets Worf, and the two talk about Webster's previous adventures, as this episode consists of clips from previous Webster episodes, much like the Star Trek Next Generation episode Shades of Grey, which aired 4 months later.
And such a good episode it was.
That is such a wild thing to put in that article.
I'm going to have to, after we record, I'm going to have to read this blog post that is titled, "Why on Earth Did Webster Make a Star Trek The Next Generation Crossover Episode?"
So I don't know if Susan Clark was in that episode at all. But
yeah, I don't know.
The Columbo Wiki refers to Beth Chadwick as a downtrodden woman.
That's sort of fair.
I guess. I mean, her brother is a dick. He doesn't deserve to be shot, but he is a dick to her.
I mean, I did put in my notes that Bryce is worth murdering. as far as anyone is worth murdering, and certainly as far as anyone that we've seen in this show so far.
Yes,
is
I would agree murdering. With that. Absolutely.
This may be the first time I sympathize with the murderer at the beginning, at least.
That said, she could have just, because he makes a joke, Bryce makes a comment that Leslie Nielsen is not would never give up his job for her. And I think the fact that his immediate reaction upon getting the letter was to get in his car at 11 o'clock at night and drive over.
Yes.
Proves that he would have probably given up most anything for her.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. So I have to call a timeout here because I have to read these two paragraphs on this blog post about the Webster episode. This may
listeners,
get cut
I'd just
out.
Like to point out the amazingness of it being Carl that's pulling us off track this time.
Okay, so the episode is titled Web Trek. Mm-hmm. Web Trek begins with Webster playing a computer game called Galaxy Man. Lightning strikes outside the house, and Webster is suddenly transported onto the bridge of the Enterprise D. The red alert sounds as Webster is scanned by a random Starfleet officer. Worf is at his usual station and asks how he got aboard. Webster blames it on his joystick, which is still in his hand. The joystick is taken away by other Starfleet officers for repairs. Worf recognizes Webster as a, quote, earthling with an unusual style of dress, to which Webster replies that he likes to stay one step ahead of the fashion, and no one else will be wearing this until 1990. However, Worf quickly informs the young boy that 1990 was more than 300 years ago, and that he is now in the 24th century. This leads to, quote, unquote, hilarious discussions and misunderstandings about the 20th century between Worf and Webster, including dancing being seen as a prelude to battle. Webster dances and gets a phaser jabbed into his side. He then talks about how his Uncle Phil is a great dancer, leading to a clip of the aforementioned Uncle Phil. Turns out this is just a clip show with Star Trek The Next Generation framing device. Other clips are shown, including Webster visiting a dude ranch, a helicopter tour, and Webster playing baseball. It all culminates in Webster's joystick being repaired and him being sent home by pressing a button on said joystick, after Worf jokingly told him to, quote, click his heels and say there's no place like home.
Okay, so Webster was produced by Paramount Television, which makes the crossover make some sense, I suppose. But there were so many other shows made by Paramount at the time. Why was this the crossover they picked?
Who knows?
Yeah, this is just the only other Star Trek crossover episode that I can think of from that era was Reading Rainbow, but that made sense because it was LeVar Burton.
Well, it wasn't a crossover. It was behind the scenes. Yeah. It was, you know,
like an actual in-character crossover would have been a weird choice for Reading Rainbow. unless they were like, you know, the book was going to be, you know, like something by Peter David. This week, kids, we're reading Q Squared.
And boy, were they confused. Anyway, that was a long wave. Yeah. The murderer in this episode is played by Webster's mother or adopted mother. Anyway.
I like how we see her imagining how the murder is going to take place.
Yes.
First. And I will say this is the first time we see a car with headlights that don't have the astigmatism lines on them.
Yes. So I have a question about this. I mean, I think I like, again, we see all the plotting here. The idea is the first scene is her breaking into her brother's bedroom at night. She steals his key off his key ring.
What's up with that keychain, by the way?
It's a choice. It's weird.
Like, because when you see the close up of it, like the keychain is like this long metal rectangle that's smaller than a key. I don't fully understand what the purpose is. Why have that at all? Why not just be a ring if that's all you're putting on it?
I don't know. I mean, it's got car keys on one end and other keys on the other, because this is back when you had two car keys, but
I guess maybe it's a separator.
Maybe.
So that you can easily, like, when you grab your keys out of your pocket, you can tell what they are.
Maybe. Like, here's where my house keys are, and here's where the car keys are on this end.
As a man of the 21st century, my keychain has my house key and my car key, and that's it.
Yep. So, yeah, that was back when cars had separate keys for the side doors and for the ignition too,
and sometimes for the glove compartment.
Yep. So okay. Going back to this murder setup, the question I have though is, one of the things she does, which I think is clever, is she takes this bulb out and replaces it with one that's burned out. How long did she have this, and how long has she been planning to murder this guy?
That's an excellent point, because you can't make a bulb burn out.
Not very well.
Not without people noticing what you're doing. Because if you flick the switch on and off repeatedly, it will burn out faster than it would if you didn't do that. Mm-hmm. But it'll still take a really long time, and people will be like, what are you doing with that light bulb?
Yeah. And she's, you know, they clearly have in-house servants and help and stuff, and they would have replaced that bulb the second they realized that it was burned out. So,
well, they only work during the day, so they wouldn't know.
Well, that's when they clean it, I guess.
That's what she says.
Yeah, that's true.
So my guess, the only thing that makes sense to me is, at one point she noticed the bulb was burned out and hatched a plan.
Okay.
Or it's possible every light in this house uses these weird yellow light bulbs, and it was like the light from the bulb from her bedside table or something.
Yeah, you called out the yellow light bulb, which is interesting.
It is bright yellow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just a thing in the 70s. Much like late edition newspapers, but
I mean, it is glowing. Yeah, it's I wasn't sure if it's like, did they just paint it yellow so it shows up on camera better? But it doesn't seem to be the case, because it's a very yellow bulb in that one moment when you see it on.
So unfortunately, if I Google yellow light bulb Columbo, I just get stuff for yellow light bulbs, and apparently a guy named Joe Columbo, who's a lighting designer.
I think that would attract bugs. I mean, Columbo makes that point later, that there should be bugs all over it. But
yeah, as someone who has changed outdoor light bulbs in my life,
he is not wrong.
It will absolutely attract bugs.
Yep.
They get gross, like, because they get covered in like the cobwebs and the dead bugs and just all sorts of stuff.
Just like he says, like, I hate changing these things. They're disgusting.
I hate the change bulbs outside my house.
Because no matter how tight I get that up in the lamp, you see, they attract a lot of dirt and gook, and they're full of dead bugs, and I just don't even like to go up there and touch them.
But yeah, I do like the idea of, like, here's how it's supposed to go, and then we see how it actually goes.
But yeah, Bryce is a total tool in this case.
Yeah.
Because he basically, we find that he's basically told his sister she can't keep dating the guy she's dating because he doesn't think he's good enough for her.
I mean, he does make the point that he works at their firm, which I guess would be a conflict of interest, but still.
Yeah.
Turns out he's not wrong, because the stuff she does later is interesting.
Yes. But if she had, but before, like, she had, like, we also learned that she has no actual power at the place, so it shouldn't matter.
No. Yeah, she has like no power at all until Bryce dies.
And it turns out, yeah, the boyfriend is played by Leslie Nielsen, whose hair is slightly less white than it is as Leslie Nielsen, the comedic actor from a decade later. But I have seen Leslie Nielsen in other serious roles. Obviously, there's that famous sci-fi movie. What's it called?
Forbidden Planet?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it still seems so weird to me that, like, he was a serious actor for a really long time, because, like, for me, as someone who's born in the 80s, I think of Leslie Nielsen as that goofy old man in all those comedy movies.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's why Airplane worked so well, because he was playing against type there.
Yes.
And then it became his type for the rest of his career.
Yeah, because he plays it deadpan and deadly serious in Airplane, and it works. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, for me, Leslie Nielsen is like Mr. Magoo and, like, stuff like that.
That's the one you went with? Okay.
That's the first one I can think of.
Could have been Spy Hard, I guess.
Mr. Magoo is better than Spy Hard. low bar, and it needs to be, because Mr. Magoo isn't very good. I will say this is absolutely the best thing we've seen Leslie Nielsen in for this podcast.
Yes, that's true. Oh, man.
I didn't see Naked Gun or Airplane as a kid. Mm-hmm. I remember Mr. Magoo from when I was a kid. That's okay. Why
that's fair.
Saying that.
There are reasons why you probably didn't see that as a kid. Right. Any of those movies as a kid. But
exactly.
Man, Airplane is a PG movie.
Well, that's because PG-13 didn't exist.
Yes, but there's like breasts in it and stuff. Like it's.
There's not. Are there nipples in Airplane?
Yes, there are.
Okay, it's been a minute since I've seen it. I don't remember that. But I'll take your word for it. Well, no, because there's Wait, really?
Yes.
Okay. I have no memory of that. But, like, there's plenty of content in that movie that isn't really, you know, child appropriate. But yeah, PG-13 didn't exist in 1980. Temple of Doom caused that to exist.
Yep. Temple of Doom and Gremlins, I think. Both together. But I think Temple of Doom was a big part of it.
Yeah, so there were a lot of movies that this definitely would have been PG-13. Because you can have breasts in PG-13 movies, Titanic being the famous example.
Yep.
I guess pretty much every movie in the 80s had breasts in it.
Most of them were R, though.
Like, there's one random scene with boobs in it in Die Hard just because.
That's like a picture, though.
No, there's the people having sex. Oh,
the people having sex in the office. That's right. Yeah, you're right. That's right.
But and that it's only there because it's an 80s movie, really. Like that scene wouldn't be there.
But again, Die Hard is an R-rated movie.
Yes, fair. Okay, I'll give you that. Airplane is a hard PG. Airplane was also a Paramount movie. Why didn't that get a Star Trek crossover?
Were there people in Star Trek in that one?
I have no idea. I'm sure
there was at least one person was in Star Trek. Shatner's in the sequel.
I've never seen the sequel.
There's one funny moment in it.
And is it the Shatner callback to the Twilight Zone?
No, it's... They call Shatner on the monitor and they tell him he's going to come down. And then he's like, I'll be down right away. And he like opens the door and it's like, it was like a window in the door and he comes through the thing.
Oh,
and he talks about how there's no, and he's like confused by there's no bridge.
Oh, okay.
It's like the only really funny
moment. I was thinking of the Shatner, appearance on, Third Rock from the Sun, where they make a joke about his famous Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never seen Airplane 2. I have heard it's not as good as the original.
It is not. All right, so the way this is supposed to go, the murder here, she's taking Bryce's key. He's supposed to go to the door and try to get in, and he can't. The light's out, so he ends up going around back and breaks into the bedroom window, and then she claims she mistook him for a burglar and shoots him.
Because she tells him it's okay for him to open the door. She turned off the alarm.
Yep.
She didn't really.
Mm-mm. He rings the bell and then she's like gets her gun out waiting for him to come through the window. And then he just stands there in the doorway like, what are you doing?
Yeah, she had put her gun down or hidden it when he.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good timing.
But like, why did he walk into her bedroom?
Well, he's probably like, why didn't you open the door for me?
You
useless woman person, because I'm a dick.
Yeah, it's and of course, the fact that he we do know when he comes in, the first thing he does is set down the paper, which is.
Mm-hmm. That comes up later.
Yes.
So she shoots Bryce. And then she sets off the alarm, drags his body over to the window. Luckily, he didn't bleed on the carpet.
Yeah. which is impressive because she shoots him in the chest and he's face down on the carpet. Yeah. How didn't he bleed on the carpet?
I blame 70s television.
It is brown carpet, so maybe it just doesn't show.
Maybe. We get some very hilarious running scenes of Leslie Nielsen here.
He runs for a long time.
He does.
But also, these scenes at night, like, his hair looks like a hairpiece in a couple of these shots. Like, it's probably not. It's probably just the way it's, like, styled. But it mm-hmm. looks fake, and it's like, whoa.
When it's, like, combed back?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because he's running so fast.
Because I feel like if he was wearing a hairpiece, it probably would be, you know, not gray.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Like, I'm sure that's his real hair, right?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, he has very distinctive hair. You know, and it looks like that. I do like Beth's reaction here when she's cleaning up the murder and then somebody rings the bell and she's like, oh my God, what's going on now? Because she's obviously not expecting.
Yeah.
Peter, I think his name is, to show up.
So I'm looking at Leslie Nielsen's Wikipedia page and there's mm-hmm. a photo of him from 1982. And it's like, that like looks like what he looked like for like the next 30 years.
Yeah. He went from that to like old Leslie Nielsen from the Spy Hard years,
which is barely different.
Yeah, he just looks old.
Yeah, I guess it's like Steve Martin. They both went white early, so then it took forever for you to notice they're old. Although Steve Martin does look old now.
He's gotten old, but Steve Martin looked like, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles Steve Martin for decades.
Yes, or I guess Patrick Stewart looked like Patrick Stewart for a good ever? 30 years. I mean, he also looks old now, but
he's old now, but yeah. Like you see him in Dune, he looks like Jean-Luc Picard.
Well, that wasn't that.
That long was only ago. A few years earlier, I guess. 5 years, I guess. Not even.
But yeah, you see him in Dune and then you see him in like X-Men and they're like 20 years apart.
Yeah.
And he looks more or less the same.
Pretty much the same. What were we watching that thing that had the guy with the comb forward?
That was last week's.
That was the artist guy. Yeah, that's right.
That was Krakow.
Joe Krakow's comb forward. That's right. So Columbo shows up to the house, as he would, and immediately starts doing Columbo things. Like, there's a newspaper sitting here. And it's turns out it's the late edition of the newspaper, which I guess was, you know, that was still a thing back then. It's not now, obviously.
Oh, he has the comb forward in TOS too. He just had a little more hair.
Oh, Krakow?
Yeah, I'm looking at a shot of Krakow now, and he definitely has. Yeah, he was definitely doing the same thing then.
Okay.
it's just doesn't look quite as bad because he had more hair to work with.
I don't know, like these people who are talking to Beth when Columbo comes in, like this one guy is clearly like he's just like leading her on.
Yeah,
like, you thought it was a burglar. Yes, I did. I thought it was a burglar. Like, what do you, what kind of police work is this?
I will say though that detective's mustache is on point.
Yes, his mustache. The other guy has pretty epic sideburns.
Well, it was the 70s. Who did epic sideburns?
True.
I noticed Leslie Nielsen's sideburns a few times. I
just noticed them right now as soon as you said that. I was like, oh yeah, Leslie Nielsen has pretty impressive sideburns.
And Columbo actually also has sideburns. It's just they blend into his, because his hair is styled lower. They just sort of mm-hmm. blend into the actual hair.
Yeah. So Leslie Nielsen actually can pull off a double-breasted jacket. It doesn't look terrible on him.
I think a double-breasted jacket usually looks good, actually. As long as it's fit well.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah,
like Roger Moore absolutely pulled off the double-breasted mm-hmm. jacket.
Yes, I can't see Sean Connery wearing one though.
Nah. No, a double-breasted jacket is more like elegant, or like mm-hmm. Like you'd expect it from someone who is more like Leslie Nielsen or Roger Moore. Yeah.
Yes,
than Sean that's Connery.
Right, for sure.
The other cop kind of looks like Isaac Asimov.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. He really does. Especially with he has the glasses.
And the sideburns. Yeah.
See, like a weird mix of like Asimov and Ray Bradbury.
Okay. Yeah. There.
Ray Bradbury definitely had the gray hair, like flowy hair, like that too. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the next day, and Columbo's up on a ladder checking out the light bulb. And Beth's mom shows up and thinks he's the help and just makes him get the bags.
And pay for the cab.
Pay for the cab.
He gives the cabbie a 50-cent tip on a 11.50 on a 10.50 fare.
Yep.
Cabbie's like, you're a sport.
Yeah, I know. I love that. Well, Columbo's like thinks about it and is like, I guess you can keep the change. Why are her bags in the front seat of the cab?
I wondered that as well. Like, especially because she certainly didn't put the bags in the
cab. No. That's a car from the 70s. It has
a giant trunk. Yeah, that's weird.
Do people still have matched luggage?
I mean, I actually do have a luggage set.
Yeah, but is it old?
Well, it doesn't look like that. It's
no, you know, but
it's they're matched roller bags for one thing.
Okay.
But it's like the big, the medium, and the small roller bags that you can Russian stacking doll them to store mm-hmm. them.
Yep.
So yeah, no, you still buy matched. People still buy matched luggage sets. That's okay. Normal.
Okay. Here's that picture you mentioned.
Yeah. So
in your notes.
Yeah. So apparently Bryce had a studio photo portrait framed of himself and put it on the piano. And there isn't one of his sister. There isn't one of his mom. There isn't one of the dead dad. There isn't one of anyone else. It's just him. What the hell?
It feels very Bryce to me.
Oh, Bryce.
That Bryce.
Bryce, you're making it really hard for me to feel bad about the fact that you got shot. Granted, Susan does a good job of making me not feel bad about the fact that she got caught for shooting him, but...
And her mom is definitely feeling bad because she walks up and hauls off and smacks her.
Yeah. The only sympathetic person in this episode is Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, I agree.
We do keep calling him Leslie Nielsen, and we probably will continue to do so, but his character's name is Peter.
Peter, yes.
I also do feel a little... no, I take it back. The car hop, the long-suffering car hop, I feel yes. I feel sympathy for her. That's someone who is burned out on her minimum wage job. It's like, and don't you forget the tray. Too many people forget the trays.
Well, what does Columbo do? He forgets the tray.
But then she's all nice when he apologizes. She's like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
But when she comes out, she's like, window down.
Yes.
It's like, that is someone who has been working this menial job for too long and is burned out on it.
Oh, yes.
But yes, so we got the photo, which was there for because it can be seen as a prop. But mm-hmm. also, I find it interesting when Columbo wants to get his $11 back. the mom says, "Oh, give me your card and I'll send you a check." He's like, "Well, I'm out of cards," which is classic Columbo. Yeah. But I think it's funny. Then she just reaches into her purse and grabs cash, which I don't think she even took it out of a wallet. I think she just grabbed loose cash out of her purse.
They're like balled up bills in her purse.
But if she had the cash, why say that you're going to write him a check?
Well, I'm either imagining she wouldn't write him a check or she would get the company to write a check or something instead of herself. Fair. She doesn't seem like the type who likes to spend her own money.
Fair.
I mean, she wanted the help to pay for the cab.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that was when she assumed the help would be using the house's money, so it would be the estate of her dead husband would be paying for the cab.
Yep.
Yeah, so then after this, we come to the coroner's jury, revealing their findings in the inquest into the death, which you said you looked it up and coroner's juries mm-hmm. are a real thing.
Yep, they are. I don't know if they meet in an actual courtroom like this as though it's a trial
right?
and read out a verdict like they do in a jury trial. But
yeah, that seems unlikely.
Because that's another thing I came up with or I was thought of when I was watching this was that I would imagine that the police would have told Columbo to knock it off at this point.
Yes.
Surely there is another murder in L.A. happening and you need to go solve that. But he doesn't buy it because of the newspaper, because he found the late edition newspaper and Beth had said that she had not left the house all day. And he's wondering, how did the paper get there?
Okay. I found another Star Trek.
Oh,
another Star Trek connection.
Okay.
The judge at the hearing or as he's credited as hearing officer.
Yep. He's I've seen him before. He's
he's the old man from For the World Ends Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. The guy who says the title of the episode.
Yes, he is.
He's also in Return of the Archons and The Cage.
Oh, he's the guy that's who introduces them to Vina.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's
this is Vina. Her parents are dead. She was born almost as we crashed.
And he's Tamar in Return of the Archons. I'm gonna guess probably one of the men at the beginning.
I think so. That's not an episode I've seen that many times, actually.
I've actually seen it several times because it was one of the few that we had taped on VHS when I was a kid. But yeah, this guy was on TOS for three separate occasions, and the one that like really sticks out is, of course, the titular line reader for The World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, because I was just swiping through the episode and I'm looking like, wait a second, I've seen this guy. Like, just now. Like, for whatever reason, it didn't pop into my head the first time I watched it, but yeah.
Beth is found not guilty of actually murdering him, that it's found to be an accident. She celebrates by saying, I'm going to go out and I have all these appointments, and she blows off Peter, and then Columbo says, let me take you to lunch. And that's when they go to the drive-in.
You know, this would have been a perfect opportunity for her to go to lunch with Peter and then ask if he wants to be her fiance.
Mm-hmm. But no, she would just rather spring it on him without asking first.
So I'm aware of the concept of the drive-in, you know, R-Hop type place where you would go and eat food. Yeah. I didn't know that they had trays that they would put to your window.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
I've never been to some old-fashioned places that still bring the food to the car, and they don't usually do the trays these days.
No, that's definitely a thing. I've heard my parents talk about that before. So
those burgers don't look very good.
Well, Leslie Nielsen doesn't think so because he just throws it on the dash and leaves it there.
Both Leslie Nielsen and Columbo hold their burgers upside down. Also, I'm pretty sure when Leslie Nielsen opens it and looks at it, literally the only thing on that burger is a patty.
Well, maybe that's why he threw it away.
Like, it's just a patty between two pieces of bun.
I think you're right. That is an unacceptable burger.
I mean, it's a plain burger. You can order them that way. Yeah. And personally, I don't like most of the condiments that come on a burger, but I would at least get cheese.
My problem with that patty, though, is that the fluffiness of the bun that Columbo has is way too out of proportion for the amount of meat in there.
Yes. But I like that Columbo's holding his burger upside down every time he takes a bite from it. And actually, it looks like Columbo's has a pickle and ketchup. So why does Leslie Nielsen not have anything?
I don't know.
But anyway, Columbo is holding his burger upside down, but when we get the close-up shot of his face, it's right side up.
Oh, well. That looks like a double burger in some shots, but I think there's definitely a pickle. There's definitely a pickle sticking out of it.
Yeah. And I there's some reddish hint mm-hmm. there that makes me think it's ketchup as well.
Yep. But he's basically interrogating Peter here about the relationship, and then
he forgets the tray, which the wild thing.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he's interrogating Peter about the yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, you were carrying the actual plot.
But
the wild thing about the fact that he forgets the tray is right before he forgets the tray, he places his cup on it.
Yes. And then he drives away.
Yeah. Well, starts to. But the car hop yells at him.
Hey, mister! You forgot the tray!
And then he goes back to the house, and we see that there's a brand new sports car.
Yeah. Apparently it was just delivered to the house.
I guess if you order an expensive enough car, they just do that.
I imagine if I ordered a McLaren, it would come directly to me.
I don't know. You might have to go to the McLaren dealership. There is one in Northern Virginia in like Tyson's Corner or somewhere near there.
No, there is. Yeah,
I know. If you order a Enterprise rental, they don't actually send the car wrapped in paper like the commercial.
No, they do not. It's probably why they don't do that anymore.
I wouldn't know. I don't watch TV commercials anymore. My knowledge of TV commercials is 20 years old.
Yeah. Chicken Tonight.
That's more than 20 years.
I know it is. It is.
I'm pretty sure that was discontinued like 30 years ago. That's
at least.
I feel like Chicken Tonight. Chicken Tonight. And then they do the thing with the wings.
I'm actually surprised Chicken Tonight didn't succeed here.
Yeah, you'd think, because like Hamburger Helper is still a thing.
Yeah. I mean, if Tuna Helper can be a thing, then Chicken Tonight should be a thing.
Tuna Helper, tuna macaroni and cheese is pretty good, actually. That said, you can achieve similar results by just getting a box of Kraft mac and cheese and putting a can of tuna in it.
Yeah. Yep.
I will say, Hamburger Helper, I still maybe once or twice a year get hungry for Hamburger Helper beef stroganoff and go out and buy a box.
Nice.
Because that's the taste of my childhood there.
I similarly had a really weird craving for Rice-A-Roni the other day.
It's the San Francisco treat.
It is. And I used to eat it all the time as a kid.
So anyway, Columbo is checking out the fancy car and then he's running an experiment.
Yep. Sort of a hands-on or a do-it-yourself experiment, he says.
Where he takes off his shoe and looks at it.
Yeah.
Then he goes to the fancy beauty parlor.
Yep. And offends everyone with his cigar.
The fragrance is not compatible.
Not compatible. I love how he just gives it to the receptionist and she has to hold it the whole time he's there.
She just holds it. She doesn't like throw it out or anything.
I expected her to like stick it in a drawer or something. But she never
does. Burn the place down.
I know. This other room has the reddest carpet I've ever seen.
It's pretty red. I've seen redder.
Okay.
Well, no, I haven't seen redder, but I have seen carpet like this in real life before.
No, me too.
But no, it looks like, I will say, it looks like the carpet in, I'm not talking the movie Clue at this point. I'm talking the board game Clue. But which is the red room? It's the parlor? It looks like the carpet in the parlor.
There is no parlor.
There's parlor in Clue.
There's no parlor in Clue. You're thinking of the lounge, maybe?
I swear there's a parlor.
Oh, there's no parlor.
You're right, there's no parlor. This isn't the Clue I played. Hold on. I need to find the exact version of Clue that I
played. The Clue you played doesn't have a parlor either.
Probably not. Okay, yeah, here's the Clue I played, I think. No, that's not it. Anyway, the Clue I played had one room with a bright red carpet. The version of Clue, the board game, that's Cluedo for you British people.
Yep. Is it the one that has like the stairs and the mysterious like shadow in the middle?
Yeah.
I think it's the lounge that has the red carpet.
Are you looking at it?
I'm looking at various.
I'm not seeing. I am not, none of these that I'm looking at immediately jump out. Oh, here it is.
I was going to say, it's not the bigger version.
Yeah, here it is. And okay, so there actually was a pattern on the carpet that I'm looking that I. But yeah, here's the, I found the one that I had as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this image has the names covered over for some reason.
Where is it?
It is the lounge. You're right.
Okay.
And also it has some magenta in it. So it's not quite as red. But yes, you're right, it's the lounge. Why was I thinking parlor? So yeah, Columbo has discovered that there are grass clippings on his shoes when he walks on the grass, but there were no grass clippings on Bryce's shoes.
There were not. Beth is very unimpressed by this.
Well, they must have rubbed off on the carpet, which she's had cleaned.
Yep. Too bad.
Columbo also finds the imprint of a key in the flower pot.
Which Beth explains was something she had put there and then she took away.
Yep.
All things that a lawyer would or explain away some evidence.
All right. So then the next scene is Beth is trying on clothes. And what is this clothing store?
I would love to go. I think there needs to be more clothing stores that have full
that
bars
have
and
pool tables and bars for the people to wait. Yes, yes. That's amazing. But like, I guess I do not have enough money to shop in that kind of clothing store, apparently, because I have never seen this anything like this before.
Well, it's such a weird thing because like they cut to a shot of Peter shooting a pool shot. And then it pans up and you're in a store, like a clothing store. It's like, what is this?
Yeah.
I have never been to a store like this before. Mm-mm.
But Peter is getting kind of fed up with Susan at this point.
Mm-hmm. Beth, not Susan. Well, Susan's the actor.
Susan's the actress. Yes. Beth.
Yeah. yeah, he's a little fed up with her new attitude towards everything.
Mm-hmm.
She asks him to stay until she finishes, and he's like, no, you know where I'm gonna be, and he leaves.
Well, Beth has a meeting with the board. She's taking over the company. They're gonna start selling their own products. Aren't they an advertising firm?
Yes.
So that's interesting. And she's making Peter she's giving Peter a promotion, and also she's engaged to Peter.
Yes.
News to Peter.
Yeah, right. And he rightfully calls her out for being, you know, it's a little nepotistic to do this, but
yeah.
Okay. I think he has a point.
Yeah. So Columbo shows up because at this point, Beth has a point that Columbo is basically harassing them at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he wants to talk about the light bulb and how clean it is. So also, this is wild to me. Like, maybe I'm just so far removed from the days of incandescent light bulbs, but he talks about how it's gonna last 2 or 2.5 months.
Yeah. Is that
really how short a light bulb would last?
Maybe back then.
Like, I feel like incandescent bulbs lasted long. The incandescent bulbs I remember lasted longer than that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because we would run lamps. I mean, he's saying, I mean, one, I never leave my outdoor. I don't usually leave my outdoor light on all night long unless I forget to turn it off.
I actually do, but I mean, they're not incandescents.
No,
I actually have bulbs with light sensors built into them outdoors, so they just turn themselves on when it gets dark and turn themselves off when it gets light. But if it only lasts two to two and a half months, that gave her a lot more opportunity to get it find a burned out.
That's
bulb.
True. That's very true. Yeah,
and it's also possible that light bulbs got better in the 25 years or so before I became aware of how long light bulbs last.
That's true too. I like when he's about to do his patented one more thing, and she yells at him, and he's like, "I'm just trying to return your light bulb."
And then she throws the light bulb and
throws the light bulb and breaks it because she's fed up with him.
So Columbo is clearly waiting for Peter to approach him at the bar.
Just a little bit.
I'd also like to point out that the barman adds more pretzels to a full bowl of pretzels.
Yes, he does. Yeah, so maybe this has changed since then, but I would be annoyed if the bartender mixed my old-fashioned in the glass.
If I'm making one for myself, I'll mix it in the glass, but that's, you know. Well,
I do that too, though. That's because I'm lazy.
Yeah, fair.
You have mixing glasses, use them. Maybe that's not an old fashioned, because that's a lot of liquid in this glass.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But yeah, that's a tall glass for an old fashioned.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw the bourbon whiskey bottle and him stirring what looked like sugar in a glass with ice, so.
Yeah, there's no orange peel, so I don't think it's an old fashioned.
No, I don't know.
Maybe it's bourbon and branch water like Roger Moore does.
Yes.
Yeah, so Columbo gets Peter to talk to him, gets him to open up, and he finds out the smoking gun, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't know how you feel about this particular smoking gun that in his recollection of the events when he was running towards the, or when he was going to the house, he heard the gunshots first and then the alarm.
No, that's a smoking gun. I think
it is. It would hold up.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would. Yeah. I think any lawyer would have trouble arguing that one away in court.
Mm-hmm.
So Colombo actually has proof this time.
He does. Or he has a witness, at least.
Yes. So then he knocks on the window and then comes in the door just like Bryce did.
Yep.
Reveals that he's, you know, got her dead to rights. She pulls the gun on him and he says, you don't want to do that. You'll get caught. There's police outside. And then he says, besides, you're too classy a woman. What? In what way is she too classy a woman? We've literally just established that she shot her brother in cold blood. And he thinks she's too classy a woman to shoot him?
Yeah. He is a very polite person. It could also be he's playing up to her image of herself at this point.
Mm-hmm. And then he just stands at the scene of the crime and starts smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the episode.
And he mentions that there are police.
There are around. No police.
That was going to be my question. Like, are there actually police out there?
I don't think there are. Think so. I think that's just that was
because they pull back and they show there's nothing. There's nobody there.
That's just because you can't ruffle Columbo.
Okay.
I think is what he says that like I applaud him for being so calm under pressure. Someone points a gun at me, I would not be that calm.
Yeah. He's got some balls on him.
Mm-hmm. Columb balls.
Episode title.
Oh god.
So yeah, not a bad episode.
No. No, I think it's a good one. I think Suitable for Framing is still my favorite of the season, but this was a good one.
Yes. There's a run of pretty good ones.
I wouldn't know. We have now reached, I am now entering uncharted territory.
Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensetospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS.
So next week's, what I should say is they had a purchase order for a certain number of episodes and they fulfilled it. And then they saw that, or they saw dailies or rough cuts or something and said, this is going really well. So we should do another episode. Mm-hmm. And the episode for the next week's show is actually the one that they added on at the end. So just bear that in mind when you watch it.
Does that make it better or worse?
We'll discuss it later. Because Peter Falk did the last he directed that what was supposed to be the last episode, which is actually the last episode of the season. And then they did this one in the middle in between this episode and the last one. So yeah, next week we will continue with season one of Columbo with the episode entitled Short Fuse.
If it's not about a bomb, I'm going to be disappointed.
It is about a bomb.
Okay. Excellent.
And Roddy McDowell is the murderer, which isn't a spoiler because it's Columbo.
It's Columbo, yeah.
And boy, does he wear some outfits.
And I know who Roddy McDowell is.
Yes.
It was, I suppose.
Right. Planet of the Apes again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's mainly where I know him from other things, but
bed knobs and broomsticks.
That's right.
But yes, Planet of the Apes is the I don't know if that's what he's most known for, but I feel like in my circles that's probably what he's most known for.
Yeah.